I'd like to call the Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee to order. And Representative Frank Hornstein, Chair. We don't have a quorum, so we'll wait to approve the minutes of February 14th. But I did, since we have people that have come up from a distance to testify, I wanted to at least get going on House File 701. And then when we do have a quorum, we'll approve the minutes and hopefully be able to move your bill onward. So, with that, I'd like to welcome Representative Reiner to the committee, and you can. We'll have a. I'll move House File actually 701 to pass and to be referred to the full Transportation Finance Committee. So,
thank you, Chair Hornstein. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on House File 701. The Mankato District Transportation Headquarters. This bill appropriates $20,673,000 to the Commissioner of Transportation to design, construct, furnish, and equip a new Department of Transportation District Headquarters in Mankato. Those of you who are not freshman legislators are very familiar with this bill. Planning for this facility began in 1998. The legislature approved funding for the site in 2000 and design funding in 2001. The bill has made it to various stages of the legislative process over the last several years. Last year it was adopted by both bodies and then made it as far as conference committee. According to Richard Post, the facilities program director for MnDOT, the replacement of this headquarters is MnDOT's number one priority. First and foremost, it is a safety issue. The existing space does not allow for the safe storage of current equipment, and the building does not meet air quality standards for the number of employees it houses. Secondly, several partnerships have evolved as the planning has proceeded, and timely construction is critical to support these. Our testifiers have expertise in both these areas and have been involved previously in the proposal, so I'd like to turn it over for more elaboration on the proposal to my testifiers, the first of which is Gordon Regenscheid, who is the Assistant Transportation Engineer for District 7.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm Gordon Regenscheid. I'm the Assistant District Engineer for Mankato District. And I'd like to reiterate some of the things that were just said, especially the safety issues of our building. When the building was constructed, our typical plow truck was a single-axle truck with only a front plow, and now we have tandem-axle trucks that are 7 feet longer, they're a few feet wider, and trying to fit them in the same garage just doesn't work. There's a lot of congestion. We're having trouble backing them out in the morning. We're to the point of... So far, we've been able to line them up on one side, but we're to the point where we're going to have trucks on both sides that are longer and thus narrow the hallway as well. The air quality issues, because initially it was set up for 39 warm storage bays, and we currently have needs for 78 warm storage bays over the last 40 years. Air quality isn't keeping up, and when you fire up all those diesels in the morning, the air gets pretty thick, and it takes some time to clear the air. We had a Homeland Security drill last year, and that's when we realized that our building is not set up adequately for to become a command center. We don't have any access to cell phones in our command center facility. Also, as I said, just access in and out of the building, it's so cramped and so tight and congested that we actually do need to have spotters help every one of our drivers in and out of our garage every morning and back in at night. So, in a nutshell, that's our biggest concerns from my perspective. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Regenscheid? Members? Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Henches, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Pat Henches, H-E-N-T-G-E-S. I'm the city manager in Mankato, and you might ask why we are here today. We've worked with District 7 to bring this project to fruition since its inception in 1998. The city is projected, proposed, and really committed to the end use of the current or District 7 offices that will be vacated. We intend to integrate our Public Works Department under one roof and utilize the facility. This will require a substantial investment. We're not looking for free lunch on this, but we likely will acquire this facility and have to make some substantial upgrades to address the air quality, to address some of the OSHA problems within the facility, and a number of maintenance items. We went into this with kind of wide open eyes. We've had what I would consider a premier relationship with District 7, and we feel that this facility, when they vacate it, will fit our needs with an investment, but also further our relationships. The new facility will have a modern truck wash that we will be working with them. We also have a number of potential coal sites that we'll work with in terms of sand salt storage, and a number of other working relationships. The city in 1993, after the legislature approved a dollar amount for the acquisition of the site, proposed site, and also design facilities, invested nearly $1 million in the proposed site. That money will be put towards the acquisition of the former vacated facility. To date, we've probably accumulated about $1.2 million in interest costs waiting for the state to make a decision on this facility. It's my understanding that the District 7 facility represents really the last district offices that need upgrading. Previous years, I think St. Cloud most recently was substantially upgraded, that district office. I believe 1993, this facility was bumped for another project near Fort Snelling in terms of maintenance facility. This facility is time to be upgraded. The time is now. The value will be great for the district in consolidating and making them more efficient, but it will also help the city of Mankato immensely. We propose to acquire that facility. That money will be a part of the overall plan. There will be some substantial upgrades we'll have to make, but it will have some significant benefits for our efficiency. Again, I would urge the committee to provide the recommendation to the full transportation committee and move forward with this so we can continue our planning and MnDOT can get their badly needed facility upgraded.
Thank you very much Mr. Henches. Any questions from the committee to any of our witnesses or to the author of the bill? Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does anybody have any information about what we usually spend on one of these facilities? Is this $20 million a high figure or low or in between? Or we built the number on this, the last one, so I thought somebody around here must know.
Chair Hornstein, if you're agreeable, Richard Post from the department would be able to answer that.
Okay. Glad Mr. Post is here. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Post.
Good afternoon. I'm Dick Post. I'm the Facilities Program Director for MnDOT. Our representative, Earhart, our buildings right now, our truck stations are being built for approximately $120 a square foot, which is really fairly low. This building will be more because it's bigger scale than what our normal truck station is, which is the smaller building. But we're well within any dollar figure, and we compare favorably to means to the typical construction of garages. We're up to date as far as technology is concerned, and so our dollar value is really coming in pretty low to do this. This is a big building because it's a big district.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Oh, Representative Earhart.
Another question, sir. Have all the other Buildings of this sort been built out of trunk highway bonding, trunk highway funds?
I can only really answer for the last 6 years that I've been here, they have been. They've all been trunk highway funds.
I mean, one, two, three, four?
We did St. Cloud in 2001. We did Detroit Lakes in 2001. We did Bemidji in 1992 or 93. It was before my time, but they were all trunk highway funds. And I believe they were all cash at that time.
One more question, Mr. Chairman. Does the city of Mankato, are we doing anything in the way of providing some monies out of the trunk highway fund for the city of Mankato? I can't quite decipher how much money the city is putting in there, but is there some part of this project that trunk highway funds are paying for?
Mr. Henches.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bearhart, actually quite to the contrary, the city has already invested $1 million in improving the site, which will be applied towards the acquisition price of the facility, which by Department of Transportation appraisers has been set at $3.2 million. So we'll apply our money towards that plus additional money. So we are not benefiting from the project new construction. We will benefit from the acquisition of the project after it's completed and pay cash for that.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Bearhart,
the existing facility you're going to acquire, the city is?
Correct.
And how do you do that? Are we selling you that thing or trading it to you or whatever,
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, a variety of trades, including application of the $1.2 million that we've already put into the site. So we have financed the current site development, roads, sewer, water, et cetera, to the tune of about $1.2 million. We also have a variety of turnback projects that we may, that cash is due on that we may forego. And there are some other properties as a part of this project that would have to be sold off.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the things we run into out there in greater Minnesota land, and I don't just mean rural Minnesota, but I mean all over, is that people are concerned about their tax, gas tax monies not going for roads. And as I do my surveys, they say, well, maybe we wouldn't mind some gas tax increase, but it's got to go for roads. And we continue to erode that fund with projects like this. And I know it's been done, and, you know, there was a bill in to create the new curtain walls on, or whatever you want to call them, on the MnDOT building, and other things that bleed money out of the and I know they're on the right-of-way, but those little memorial stations along the highways is another $4 or $5 million out of the trunk highway fund. And people really, it's hard to tell them, yes, this money all goes constitutionally to roads, the road fund, when actually, and I know that this has been adjudicated, and I think it's correct and all that sort of stuff, but it's still... It still is bothersome when you say to the people, no, that money is going for roads, and that's why we've got to raise your gas tax and this sort of stuff. Yes, it's going to the roads, when it's not really all doing that.
Representative Chair Hornstein, sure. Representative Earhart, there's others who could probably give more detail on this, but I would say it, we have made this case in our community very strongly, and our community does understand that the gas tax will go toward this building in addition to the roads. And the issue is a safety issue, and it not only affects the issues around the size of the property and so forth, but it affects road safety because the vehicles that are being stored and cared for the maintenance of our roads are not currently being cared for properly because of the inadequacies of this facility. So I think it's very easy to make the case that it's part of appropriate trunk highway funding.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it has been made, and I think the courts agree with it, but it's a perception. But anyway, that's enough of that, I guess.
Good points. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I guess the two testifiers can ask this, but what would happen to this site if this doesn't happen, if, say, we don't move on this? What's going to, is the city of Mankato then going to look at other sites to consolidate their services and not buy this site? What would happen to this site then to the city in the city of Mankato? Would it then go to other development, or would it just sit languish there till we build a NDOT site? I mean, you know, is this the best? I'm reading the stuff here. It says the highest and best use, which is a real estate term. That is this the? I mean, would this be developed? Are there other things that could this site could be developed into if it didn't go to City of Mankato? City of Mankato went elsewhere.
I guess this is a question for Mr. Henches.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think at this point we have done all our planning with in terms of consolidation and upgrade of our various public works facilities, and including the reuse of one of our prime facilities by our public safety department, all centered around acquiring this facility. Because it is designed for kind of governmental public works type functions, that's the highest and best use for it. It really does not have a lot of commercial value. It's in fact tucked up against a residential area. It's on a former trunk highway, but it is not. It doesn't have a lot of value that I would see in putting it out in the open market at some later date. But I can tell you this: our facilities, we have continually planned for consolidation of our facilities and reuse of those properties with the intent of eventually acquiring this property. We also have invested, as I keep on emphasizing, the $1.2 million in the site that at some point in time that marker has to be called. Just to kind of reiterate one more point is that when this project started, I believe it was a $12 million project. And the cost of doing this and the cost of upgrading the facilities at the state level are just like the private sector and other governmental units. They aren't going down. They will only go up.
Follow-up, Representative Nelson?
So I guess what I'm hearing, and that's kind of what I was trying to get at, the value of this property is more, it's a higher value to the city than if it, than it were to be sold either for commercial development or residential development, that, again, the highest and best use is the city of Mankato purchasing these from the city, so the state, by selling it to the city, is going to get the most amount of money or revenue out of this, the most cash that they can go to reinvest in their new facility, and it wouldn't be a wise move to delay this and then throw it back on the open market because the state wouldn't get as much money out of it.
Mr. Chair, in my opinion, Representative, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would just really encourage members to pass this and send it on to finance, because this is a bill that we have been looking at for years, as Representative Brainerd suggested. It ends up in the conference bill, and unfortunately, it just got lost. And some of us around the table toured this a few years ago, and it's been a few years ago. I don't know, Representative Earhart, if you were there or not, but we thought it was a danger at that point. And it's a win-win because we have the city wanting to purchase it. So I just really hope that we'll pass it with some enthusiasm. And also, it is the last one from MnDOT to be constructed, as we had heard in testimony, and the cost does certainly continue to go up. And I don't know about 12 million, but I know that I've seen the 15 and I've seen the 18, and as we continue to grow. So I'm hoping it'll go through.
Thank you very much. We've never had an exhortation yet in the Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee to pass something with enthusiasm for. So when we vote in a minute or two, right, members, those who are planning to vote aye, we really
go for it.
Deference.
That's
to Representative,
right,
Ruth.
Thank you.
So we'll see if we can get some volume. Any other questions of any of the witnesses or of the author of the bill before we vote? Okay. So with that in mind, and Representative Ruth's suggestion in mind, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion does carry enthusiastically,
thank
I may add.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, and thanks
representative
for everyone for coming up from Mankato for this. Members, we do now have a quorum, and so I will ask us to see if Representative Portman would be willing to move the minutes of Wednesday the 14th, if you ever had a chance to check those out yet.
I did look those over, and they looked just right.
Okay, so Representative Portman moves the minutes of February 14th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. And that motion carries also enthusiastically, I might add. So, with that, we have our chair, Representative Leader, on for the next House file, number 763. Yeah. Well, this is the chair, so. Mr. Chairman, welcome to our committee, and I would be very happy to move House File 763, move it to pass with a re-referral to the full Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 763 deals with a bidding process, which is actually the bidding process that had been in practice prior to this bill, and the bidding process that will change if this bill were to pass. And really what it amounts to, it brings us up to date with the current technology. It provides for electronic bidding rather than having a bid opening and everybody comes to a bid opening and bids are read aloud. It makes some provisions for electronic bidding. And Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I'd like to have the department testify on that behalf.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman, and we have Eric Radin from MnDOT here. So welcome again to the committee. Welcome back, and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and I'll just run through the bill fairly briefly. We also passed out this handout, which has some information on MnDOT's bids and the amount of bids that we already do receive electronically, which, as you can see, especially for the bids over $500,000, we're receiving most of those bids electronically already. Sections 1 and 3 of the bill deal with the advertisement of bids, and we would propose to eliminate the need to advertise bids in a newspaper or other periodical of general circulation. Currently, we advertise in a publication called the Construction Bulletin, and we've reduced the cost of that from about $90,000 per year to about $40,000 per year by reducing the size of our advertisement and just directing people to our website. And electronic bidding in Section 2, we already require all bids over $5 million to be submitted electronically, and we're proposing that all Trunk Highway bids be submitted electronically. And we would phase that in according to the following schedule. Starting on July 1st of 07, we would require that all contracts over $1 million be submitted electronically. On July 1st of 08, we would require that all contracts over $500,000 be submitted electronically. And then starting on July 1st, 2009, we would require that all contracts be submitted electronically. And this will help to reduce our costs. Over in 2003, we're spending over $60,000 a year in typing in bids that came in and entering that data, and we've reduced that cost to approximately $20,000 per year. But we can save that entire amount by requiring all bids to be submitted electronically. And it will also, we feel, reduce the number of bid submittal errors. Recently, we had to, on one letting, we had to throw out 9 bids because they had errors contained in their bids. But if you fill out a form electronically before it allows you to send it in, it will actually tell you that you have a mistake, and then you can go back and fix that before you send it in. And then finally, the public reading of bids, which is in Section 2. This is something that several states have started doing already, and we would like to be able to do that as well. Currently, we have in the cafeteria of the MnDOT building, we have people show up, and we actually open a paper copy of the bids, and we would propose to do that over the internet. It takes several MnDOT staff at least a half a day to set up that process and then tear down after the bid reading is over. So that's what our proposal is. We'd be happy to answer any questions. We do have some other folks here if there are technical questions that come up.
Would you want to have Mr. Werke testify? Is he here just as a resource?
No, I believe he wants to say a few words.
Okay. Well, why don't we have, if there's any questions first of Mr. Radin, we can take those now, and then we can call in Mr. Werke. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony, and we have one more witness. Tim Werke is here with us. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Werke.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hornstein, committee members. For the record, my name is Tim Werke. I represent the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota, and we are a trade association of highway and general building contractors. I represent the majority of the highway contractors in the state, and I'm pleased to be able to come here and offer my support for Representative Leader's Bill, House File 763. A couple of comments picking up on Mr. Rudin's testimony that I think are important to point out for our members, I just summarize in three easy words for our members. It's accuracy, it's efficiency, and it's flexibility. I think Mr. Rudin pointed out to you that the accuracy component is highly desirable in that a contractor's bid cannot be subject to disqualification because of an addition error or some other type of error that may occur in putting a paper bid together, a human error. Secondly, the efficiency aspect comes into play in a number of different ways. Our members desire and like the opportunity to not have to come to St. Paul to sit at the MnDOT cafeteria on a Friday and go through a bid opening. They can sit in the comfort of their office and see the results and participate in the bid opening process that way. The other efficiency I think needs to be pointed out in that this process electronically allows a bid to get maximum price efficiency in that if a supplier for a contractor makes a last-minute change in their price, and that price is a significant reduction in cost, the contractor can upload that quantity price change into his bid almost immediately and resubmit it in a matter of minutes. And if that price change occurred at 8:30 and the opening was at 9, he could update his bid, and if he was the low bidder, the state would realize that cost savings. So that's efficiency. The flexibility, again, I went through was that it a number of those components that allows the contractor to be able to be more efficient and flexible in the way that they process and handle their bids. So I'm very supportive and stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Werke. Questions of Mr. Werke from the committee? Okay. Any final comments from Chairman Leader, the author of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We should remember that this doesn't affect the statute as far as the bidding process. No, it just changes how the bids could be received.
Okay. Members, I think we're ready to vote. I'll renew my motion to pass House File 763 and re-refer it to the full Transportation Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion carries. The bill is passed, and we'll see Representative Leader again in his committee. We have one more Bill, and you can stay where you are, Mr. Chairman. It's House File 730, the license plate modification. And I will also move your House File, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, on to pass, and then we'll move it on again to the full Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 763 deals basically with the housekeeping thing for the Department of Vehicle Services, which allows them to some minor changes in the language, but the one thing that does it allows them eliminate a plate. In I call it eliminate, but sometimes plates are issued in the issuance of a plate that's a special plate. The owner has changed his profession or something dealing with the plate, and this allows the Department of Vehicle Services to withdraw that plate. And that's basically it, other than some technical language within the bill. And Mr. Chairman, I have the Director of Vehicle Services, Pat McCormick, here. She's able to testify to the bill.
Okay, thank you very much, and welcome to the committee, a veteran of many Transportation Policy Committee hearings.
Well,
Ms. McCormick, welcome back again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, and we appreciate Representative Leader's sponsorship of this bill. This bill allows us to be authorized to revoke or recall certain special license plate where the owner no longer qualifies, and that would be, as an example, someone who's a volunteer firefighter or has volunteer ambulance plates, so that if that person is no longer serving in that capacity, those plates would be able to be recalled. And this was brought to our attention and was requested by the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association and is also supported by the Department of Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. It also does allow for the, it eliminates the current requirement that if you have, for instance, a veteran plate, a National Guard plate, volunteer ambulance or firefighter plate, that you can have a plate, a special plate, on more than two vehicles. The current law only allows it to be on two vehicles. So we have had requests where they would like it on more than two vehicles, so this would allow for that to happen. And then finally, it would give the department authority to revoke collector series plates on vehicles where the owner and the vehicle are no longer domiciled in Minnesota. Right now, there has been instances where the department learns that the vehicle is no longer domiciled in Minnesota, but it's still, because it's a permanent registration, the plates are still Minnesota collector plates. And so this would allow us to have a more accurate record of those vehicles that are domiciled in the state and registered with the state, and also just makes our vehicle records more accurate in general. So those are basically the three provisions that take place in this legislation, and we appreciate very much your consideration.
Thank you very much, Ms. McCormick. We have a question from Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. McCormick. I had a constituent contact me who had a collector's plate. I think he had a 63 Barracuda. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he had been notified by Department of Motor Vehicles that he had to give up his plate because the series had gone through his collector number and was now repossessing the plate. Does that sound familiar to you? It sounded kind of strange to me, but as I looked into it, I found out that that's in fact the case. If they're going through the series on a collector's number, that they'll actually recall it. Can you clarify that issue for me a little bit?
Ms. McCormick, yeah, that maybe the collector plates become collector items themselves.
Yes,
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, yes, now that you bring that to mind, there is a, I'm not probably very articulate in this because it is pretty technical, but there is something that is in the law that says that if in the normal occurrence of those, of the registration, that plate would be used in a normal plate versus a that plate number would be used in the normal plate
sequence
series that or sequence that you can't use it on a collector plate. I think that this legislation does attempt to get at that issue, but let me verify that, and I'll get back to you, because I think that was one of the issues that we were trying to get away from so that we would be able to allow that, because we do have that come up. I'm looking to see if this is in the section, one of the sections.
And Mr. Chair, just to follow up to that point, now we have people who are restoring these cars, have this plate on there as the original plate, and they place a lot of value, and I think they actually pay a pretty handsome sum for that collector's plate as well. And I think it's kind of one of those issues that we would like to definitely keep the integrity of that automobile and the license plate together if at all possible. If this would fix us, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, if you, on page 2 of the summary that you have under original plates, I think this takes care of that. It says under Section 5, allows the department to authorize the use of original plates from a collector's vehicle even when the original plate number matches a current plate number, and removes the obsolete language. And I'm fairly certain this takes care of your issue, but I'll verify that and let you and the other committee members know.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. McCormick, I appreciate that.
Very much appreciated, Ms. McCormick. Any other questions of Ms. McCormick or the author of the bill? Okay. Well, any final concluding comments, Chairman Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, the only other thing is, if you notice in the bill, it changes the word from director or registrar to commissioner, and that's what's throughout the bill. And that's because that's the person that could do the revocation or whatever is needed to be, rather than the registrar under the present statute.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Leader. Okay, members, with that, there are no further questions or discussion. The chair renews his motion to pass House File 730 and we refer it to the full Transportation Finance Committee. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion carries. The bill is passed and referred to the full Transportation Finance Committee. So, members, that concludes our formal agenda. I do have one announcement. We will be meeting next Wednesday, so I think it's either the last or second to last in our series of field hearings. We will not be meeting here next Wednesday, so there's no afternoon subcommittee meeting, but we are going out to Minnetonka at 7 o'clock, Minnetonka City Hall, for another field hearing. We'll focus on transit and various other transportation issues, but primarily transit questions. And so, if you know some people in the western suburbs that you'd like to testify, obviously anyone from anywhere in the state can testify, but we're going to focus a little on some of the West Metro issues in particular. So, no meeting. Chairman Leader.
Mr. Chair, did you announce there'd be a bus, and that is there an early thing or not? Is that correct?
Yes, I understand that we will be providing transportation, and we'll have a follow-up email about that. I think it worked pretty well with our Burnsville meeting. So, yes, lots of questions about the announcement. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I got an email about some 494 group meeting from 6 to 7, and I just wondered if we can arrange for the bus to get there so we can be there for part of that. But that would be great.
Okay. Our committee administrator has that under advisement. Your question? Okay. So, and having said that, then, like all the policy committees, it looks like the first 3 weeks of March will be quite busy. And it's my intention to hear bills and have, efficient, as efficient as possible meetings. we can't get to everything during our daytime hours. It is not my preference, and we will work as hard as we can to avoid it, but we may have to do early evening meetings on Wednesdays. So just keep that in mind as you're planning your March calendars, that we wouldn't be doing Fridays in this committee. I don't anticipate that, certainly not weekends, but we may have to. And again, it's not my preference not to, but it will depend on the number of bills we have. And again, trying to balance our interest in including the public as much as possible and having as vigorous debate as possible, but also within time constraints. So we do anticipate in this policy committee, as in many others, a very busy March with our deadline again coming up on March 23rd. Representative Houseman, did you have a question? Okay. So with that, the committee stands adjourned for the day.